McLean Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Playing Gardening. Boy, lots of fun things to talk about this morning. Lots of great pictures, lots of text. We got interrupted, and I want to, because this is so much fun. If you anybody who has the opportunity to do this, it's just one of life's great treasures. Someone sent me a picture. Is this who sent me this picture? Let me figure out who sent me the picture. Can't tell exactly. Maybe I'm thinking it was Brian, but they sent me. It is Brian. Brian sent me these pictures about these bugs on a Japanese maple, and they're so much fun. So Brian, take your finger and pretend it's a little. It's a sheepdog. You know, take two fingers and pretend you've got two sheepdogs. And then just herd those little guys. They're so much fun. Because they're just like little sheep. You could herd them just like little sheep. Just take your fingers and you kind of move it towards it. And you'll see them. And then you could pretend like your two little sheepdogs, which are the ends of your fingers. Just go right up between them and you'll see them part. It's the funnest thing in the whole world. These are called bark lice. Bark lice. And they're really cool looking things. They really don't harm the plant at all. They don't harm the plant at all. Period. They are there to clean up detritus. They eat things on the bark. And you'll see outbreaks of them. They kind of have a protective mass that they all move in uniform ways. They are the coolest things in the world. You have one of the great treasures of nature, bark lice. And don't worry about it. Not going to hurt you. Not going to hurt anything. But use those two little fingers. Pretend they're sheepdogs. Man, this is the kind of thing that really makes quarantining pleasant, you know? Ha ha. Laura.
Yes.
So let's talk about the lichen in your yard. And Laura called and she said that she's got this stuff in her yard. She's not quite sure what it is, but it's kind of spiky looking and it's very low to the ground and it's kind of a grayish green or bluish green or green color, but it's spiky and it's taking over the lawn. And I said, well, there's a cause and effect problem. The lawn is dying and the only thing that can grow there is lichen. And the other thing I told her about lichen is that lichen won't compete with grass. It has no ability to compete with grass. Or any weeds for that matter. So it's only growing in places where literally no other plant will grow. And so we've got to figure out why no other plant will grow there. And there's a couple of reasons that we can address. And the first one, Laura, that we came to was knowing a little bit about where you were and knowing what that landscape looks like, I thought, shade. And we agree that you got a lot of shade, right?
I do.
Yeah.
A lot of water oaks.
So it's got to be very difficult. And the water oaks are difficult on it from a couple of perspectives. They have they're very greedy when it comes to moisture. They for some reason plants don't do well under water oaks. They just don't. Unless the water oaks are very old and beginning to get unhealthy, and then everything comes back because the water oaks begin to lose their tops. So we know that one of the things you can do, one of the things you can do is remove some of the water oaks. And I don't know that that's a bad thing to do, particularly the ones close to your house, because water oaks don't live long. They get a lot of fungal diseases, and they almost always, during hurricanes, they do as much damage as any other tree in Mobile. It's just that simple. So one thing is remove the water oaks. The second thing is, if you don't want to remove the water oaks, or at least thin them, you can raise the branches a little bit, as much as you can. The biggest problem, The biggest problem for shade is shade that are branches that block the light that comes in early in the morning and late in the afternoon. So anything that's blocking light before 11 o'clock, really bad. Anything that's blocking light after 3 o'clock, pretty bad. The stuff that's blocking light at midday, not too big a deal. Because midday light is not that efficient in terms of plants being able to use it. So it's that early morning light and the late light, and you can deal with that by actually raising the branches on those water oaks. You probably want to get a professional service to do that so that they'll know what they're doing and so that they do it right. But you can raise the branches so that you're getting more side light, and that may help the grass. Now, the other thing you can do is to find a plant that will grow in those spots that can tolerate those low light conditions. A lot of people know what's fixing to come out of my mouth, and I'm sorry I have to say it again, but it's not a bad solution. It's a really good solution, and it works really well, and it's called monkey grass. And in those areas, if you use monkey grass, it'll probably survive even water oaks, and it will probably compete with the lichen. Now, I'll also tell you something else. The area, because you've lost the grass, and because the area where the lichen's growing is probably fairly compacted too, and because it's sandy soil that compacts really easily, and because you may have had mowers or some kind of traffic over it, and maybe even there's a high water table, you probably need to break the soil. So if you decide to do monkey grass, don't get a tiller. Talk to me about it, and we can talk about how you will need to crack it, which is going to be really hard with all those water oak roots. But you probably do need to crack it before you put monkey grass in there. So there's three solutions. But, you know, I do think you're probably going to need to remove some of the water oaks.
Interestingly, 2 weeks ago, one randomly fell. So that's been removed. Didn't know that it was an issue until, of course, it fell. And while they were here, they did exactly what you said. They did limb up the water oaks. The other water oaks are in the yard, so maybe there will be a little bit more sunlight coming into the yard.
And of course, when the water oaks fall in the next tropical storm, which they will do, you'll have even more light. So you have that to look forward to. Just make sure they don't fall on your house, okay?
Yes, exactly. Unfortunately, this one did.
Oh, no. Well, look, it's all of those water oaks. 25 years growing, 25 years dying. That's the old expression I heard. I can't think of anything that better describes a water oak. And those trees, if they're any size, they're on their way out. And they're going to take your house with them when they go. So be careful.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, when you decide to look for other solutions, call me back. We'll talk about in detail how to deal with it. All right?
I sure will. Thank you.
All right. Bruce, sorry to hold you up. What's going on?
Well, I planted this garlic last year. Well, this year, and it started sitting out multiple shoots of leaves on each of the plants, you know, like 10 leaves all of a sudden, and I don't know if it's messing up, the bulbs at the bottom, the cloves.
Yeah. So tell me,
I'm sorry?
Tell me something. What kind of garlic did you grow?
Well, I've got three different kinds of turban garlic. I got the Thai purple, early Portuguese, and blossom.
Yeah. Early Portuguese may have some problems. The Thai purple would have the least problems in my mind. And blossom, generally pretty good. You're in Mobile, right?
Right.
So you haven't had too much rain, I don't think, which can sometimes cause them to rebulb. But here's what I think. Yes, sometimes you get those extra leaves. I'm getting them this year. Different kinds of stresses cause that, the bulbs to split and to start forming new bulbs. It may be good to go ahead and harvest some of those. Have you noticed it as much with the Thai purple as you did with the other two varieties?
It's pretty much all three of them. The Thai purple probably has a couple of plants that haven't done that yet.
Yeah. So, you know, you might dig one or two of each type of plant up and see if the bulb is beginning to split and to form more bulbs, and you may find that it's already time to harvest, because late April and May is actually the time to harvest if you've planted them at the right time. If you planted in October, November, and even as late as December, these turban varieties will often be ready in late April and May, particularly as warm a winter as we've had.
I dug up a couple of them, and they weren't splitting yet. But like I say, all these leaves are coming from the cloves, where the cloves should be. So I just get the feeling it's not going to make the cloves.
Where the cloves should be.
Yeah,
you mean they're coming from the... Yeah, you know, hold on, Bruce, because we're going to have to take a break. Charlie, let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll come back and let's talk to Bruce, because this, I'm going to have to do a little bit of diagnostics here. When we come back, y'all hold on, lots of questions. We're getting to them as quick as we can.
The rain is falling through the mist of sorrow that surrounded me. The sun could never fall away. The bliss that lays around me. Let it rain. Let it rain.
My buddy Austin Key from Arrow Exterminators back in studio, and it's mosquito season. Oh, it kind of always is to some degree.
Yeah, where we live, I don't think there's not a mosquito season. You know, it ramps up usually, and we start our program processes in March and run them through October, but we're still a phone call away if you need that service in the quote-unquote winter months.
Yeah, we've been so wet, too. There's a lot of places for mosquitoes to reproduce.
Yeah, you know, we go out there, we'll send the home evaluator and do it, but there's a lot of things that the homeowners can do before they even call us, like limit your moisture sources. You know, we talked about before, closing the lids on the garbage can, flipping over pots that aren't being used, or the little catch basins underneath to make sure they got drain holes in it to limit that stagnant water sitting around your place.
But if we do that and we still have mosquitoes, y'all can help us.
We're a phone call away. Just give us a call. We'll send out one of our experts or our home evaluator to check out the situation and then build a program that'll be detailed just for you.
All right. Do that. How do we get in touch with you?
You can reach us at 888-GO-ARROW or arrowexterminators.com.
When you're injured, the insurance company often tries to pay you less than you deserve. They call it business. We call it bullying. I'm Matt Morgan of Morgan & Morgan. Every day, we get our clients more than what the insurance companies initially offered and more than they were hoping to pay. Sometimes even 100 times more. How do we do it? It's simple. It starts with believing and it ends with betting. Believing in you and betting on ourselves. We use our size, our financial resources, and our reputation to take on the biggest bullies and get you the biggest results. We have recovered billions of dollars for our clients. You know what the insurance companies are hoping for? That you hire the wrong law firm that won't make those bets. That's why when you need a lawyer, the choice you make makes all the difference. Results matter. Reputation matters. Choices matter. So after an injury, who will you choose? There's only one Morgan & Morgan for the people.
No representation is made that the quality of legal services is greater than others. Patrick Montgomery responsible for this ad.
Did you know you may be at risk of vision loss even if you're not experiencing physical symptoms? Heritage for the Blind recommends you prevent blindness by scheduling a vision screening today.
If you own an old or unwanted car, donate it today to Heritage for the Blind. Just call 1-800-715-2203. Pickup is free and your donation is tax deductible. Heritage for the Blind is an IRS-recognized nonprofit organization that helps promote eye health and aids the blind and visually impaired. They accept cars, vans, and trucks. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. It will be towed away for free. Call right now to donate your car, and as a special thank you for calling, you'll get a free 3-day vacation voucher to many exciting locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-715-2203. Donating is easy and your vehicle is towed away for free. Call now 1-800-715-2203. That's 1-800-715-2203.
It's the Prep Sports Report presented by Alpha, live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studio Saturday mornings at 8.
Brought to you in part by Kramer's Seafood, Blue Water Lumber, and C&C Financial Services and Auto Sales.
Hi, this is Coach Rick Cleveland. Join me, Mark Laster, and Corey LeBounty on Prep Sports Report 52 weeks a year as we discuss topics of interest, including interviews with players, coaches, and administrators.
It's the Prep Sports Report Saturday mornings at 8 on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Boy, a lot of folks, a lot of questions this morning. And it's good. We're going to get back to this garlic question. So Dan is asking me, can I use a chainsaw on this camphor tree to get it out from the crepe myrtle that's growing in the middle of the crepe myrtle? And Dan, that is a question that can only be answered by understanding your expertise with a chainsaw. I would probably not use a chainsaw in that situation. But it's a booger. It's got to be a toughie. You know, the thing is, the crepe myrtle will resprout, and so will the camphor tree. It may be easier to control the resprouts on the camphor tree if you just cut the whole thing back. I don't know. You'll have to see. That's a tough one. Is it a good go? And he's asking, is it an okay time to lop big Southern Indian azaleas to the ground? Yes, but make sure you know what you're doing. It'll still be okay. Don't do it too much later than this. This is your last chance. Great pictures of arugula from Mrs. Jim in Georgetown. Just beautiful looking plants. Nice rocket, classic flowers. The nice thing about having arugula is it often comes back from seed. So let's get back to this garlic question. Tell me. So, Bruce, I'm looking at the pictures, and it's doing something. Garlic sometimes does this, and I think there are a lot of causes for it. It can be a mild winter. It can be a lot of moisture coming after a relatively dry period. It can be just a lot of moisture in general. A lot of things can cause the garlic to split into smaller bulbs. The more organic matter you have in the soil, then the more evenly moist the soil is, the less that tends to happen. In soils that tend to get overly moist or that tend to go from very dry to very wet too quickly, it seems to be more of a problem there. That's my view of it. So I think, and looking at your pictures, I don't think the bulbs have begun to split up so that they're unusable yet. I think they'll still be very usable. And it's getting to the point where it's time to probably dig them. So you might, the ones that are beginning to do it the most, go ahead and, you know, go ahead and dig them, start using them.
Yeah,
no reason not to do that. And then have you put your finger in the ground and kind of felt around to see how big the bulbs are getting?
Oh yeah. Yeah, they just started growing in the last 10 days or 2 weeks. I pulled a couple of them up and eaten them, and they're still good.
So there's nothing wrong with the bulbs. They just won't be as pretty and they won't keep as long.
Right.
So I would go with the ones that, and they may not be as quite as well developed, but they'll still be good to eat. So just kind of work your way through the ones that have the most, that are doing the most vigorous releafing from the center. Go ahead and pick those first. I think most of them are going to be okay, though, and it's almost time to harvest for you. I mean, you should be very close. When did you plant? Can I ask you, Bruce? When did you plant?
I think it was October.
Yeah, It's
from the Fillory Farm.
That's right.
They sent them in September, early October.
Yeah, and traditionally in Mobile, I try my I would let them go as long as I could in my dad's garden up in central Alabama, but it was by the 1st of June, I had to have collected everything because they were all ready to come out. And in Mobile, generally it's the last of April and the 1st of May when I'm pulling all my garlic. So I think you're about ready anyway. So just start working through it, and I think you'll be okay.
I grow the elephant garlic, and I'm used to it. It, you know, it grows up and it makes an escape, and a few leaves die at the bottom, and then check the bulb and pull it up. So I've been waiting on these to make an escape, but apparently they're just not going to do it. Huh?
Oh no, no. Well, good. So I'm glad you asked that question. Don't expect escape at all in Mobile. The flowering scape, the flowering stem, sometimes called a scape, doesn't happen in Mobile because it doesn't get cold enough. We rarely do we ever see scapes in Mobile. A lot of turbines don't produce scapes at all, particularly in Mobile conditions. So you don't wait on the scape. You're basically waiting for it to bulb up. Generally, you get some die down of some of the lower leaves and you'll know when to harvest. But you're already getting a little bit of sprouting, so you may need to harvest before you get die down of some of the lower leaves. When the first three ranks of leaves have started dying off, then it's time to harvest. But you may have to pull just a little bit before then. Don't wait for the scape.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you.
All right. And somebody asked me, what's the proper way to dry garlic? That's a story in and of itself. I'm going to come back to it. If I miss it, you call me and remind me. Got a lot of callers. Will, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill. Love the show. I sent over some pics a little while ago. Me and the kids are starting hydroponic tomato growing this season just for fun. And the pic is about 4 weeks worth of growth. And I was wondering if that's what tomato roots would normally look like after growing for about 4 weeks.
You know, I haven't seen your picture has not gotten to me yet. Sometimes that happens. It may be a big file and it's just kind of gets caught in somebody's throat somewhere and it's not, I haven't seen it yet. But can you describe it to me a little bit?
I got a couple other questions. So I'll send them over. I'll send them to you again in just a second. But one of the things you were talking about is invasive species a little while ago. And I was curious. I purchased some land up in Washington County a couple of years ago, and about 10 years prior to that, it had been clear cut. And really, the only thing that grew back was yaupon. And is yaupon an invasive species? Can you make tea out of it? And how do you kill it?
No, it's not. It's a native species. It was treasured by the Choctaws and Creeks long before people came here. They treasured it for something that they made out of it called the black drink. It makes a great tea. The tea is very much like yerba mate, which is a very popular tea in South America made from a similar holly, Ilex paraguayensis. And this one is called Ilex. You may know that the official name for this plant is Ilex vomitoria, because it was used in ceremonies in which people threw up in those societies, and we can get into why that was done. But it wasn't actually the Ilex. It wasn't the holly that was doing it. So yes, you can make tea. And you make it from the fresh young leaves. And in fact, I have some tea that's actually, it's actually being sold now as yaupon tea. It comes in without fire. The problem is lack of fire. And we can talk about that. But you know what? I got to take a break. Can we come back and talk about it and why
Absolutely.
You have yaupon now taking over? So, Charlie, you said I got to take a break, right? Yeah, I'm looking at the time. It's that time. As soon as we come back, we'll talk a little bit about yaupon. Hey, folks, hold on. It's a busy morning. Thank you.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Boy, there's lots to talk about this morning. Where were we last? We were talking about Yopon. Wow, do I get to talk about a lot of fun things this morning, Yopon. So you had some land up in we had some land, Will, up in Washington County. And it was longleaf. It was probably all longleaf. Washington County was famous for us. I could tell you some great stories about Washington County, and about fire and about longleaf there. In fact, a lot of those stories are in my book on longleaf, Longleaf Far as the Eye Can See, along with some pictures from Washington County. So it's a really interesting story. But once we think of fire as something extra, that it's not integral to a landscape. But fire in the Southeast is like rain. And when you take away rain, you change the forest. When we took away fire, we changed the forest in dramatic ways. So plants like yopon that were not very common, and then in fact Indians were careful to preserve their little colonies of yopon because it was so important for the sacred drink. And it was a sacred drink that they produced from yopon. Early settlers did too, but it was very restricted. They had to be very careful. But when we changed things, when we said, no more fire, we're going to build roads to stop the fire, we're going to build fields to stop the fire, we're going to have volunteer fire crews that stop the fire. And so the annual and probably once three or four times every decade, the fires that would whisper through these landscapes, they didn't occur anymore. The great diversity of that longleaf forest changed, and plants that were never weedy before suddenly became weedy, and yopons took over those areas. And so what happens is you get these big, big colonies of yopon. And it's now very hard for fire to penetrate those areas. And you know, honestly, at that scale, unless you figure out a way to market your yopon as tea, that yopon is not very valuable for much of anything. So we can talk about ways, and you should call me back. You should think about it and think, do I really want all this yopon? If you don't want that yopon, think about it. Call me back next week or the next week, and let's talk about what are some of the solutions to dealing with that.
Okay, absolutely. I'll do it. Yeah, I definitely don't want the yopon. We'll be getting to call in the next couple of weeks. And then one last question. Do you proactively spray tomatoes with anything, or just wait until you actually see an issue before you address it?
You know, I hate spraying stuff. It's like a pain in the patootie to me. Now, I will spray things, and I try to check them, but no, unless you have bugs, I wouldn't recommend spraying. And even in a hydroponic situation, don't proactively spray. No. Let's call me back next week. Let's talk about spraying. It'll be a good time to talk about spraying tomatoes, too. Okay?
Appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
All right. Good. Dennis, tell me how Dennis has stickers in his grass, right? Is that right,
yeah.
Dennis? So I got to ask you a couple of questions.
Okay.
So I don't make any assumptions, and so you don't get mad at me. Tell me how high you mow your grass.
Oh, right now I'm mowing at about 2 3/4 inches. We'll go up to about 3 to 3.5. You know, as the spring comes on.
Yeah. So usually stickers don't. We usually don't have a problem with stickers in the grass. And I forgot the Latin name. I could give you all that, but we usually don't have a problem with those stickers. Sand burrs, sand spurs, whatever we call them, lawn spurs.
These aren't the sand spurs. These are the little hard sticker that. I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's.
I remember the
and they just kicking the tires of the lawnmower and goes in your shoes and gets scattered around that way.
Yes, and you know, I remember them sticking in the soles of my bare feet when I was a child.
Yeah.
And thinking, ah, boy, do they hurt. So
yes,
here's the thing. Yes, and so here's the one thing I can tell you about the stickers, and it seems to be, it just seems to be consistently true because I've had them show up in my yard. They never show up in places unless the ground sees the sunlight. As long as ground is seeing the sunlight, you're going to have stickers. So if your grass is thin, it's a perfect place for those stickers to come in. I have St. Augustine. Do you have St. Augustine or do you have Centipede?
Actually, I've got Centipede.
Yeah, and so Centipede allows more space for it. The best treatment that I know is to raise your lawnmower height as soon as possible. And this time of year, I'd go ahead and raise it as much. You can cut early on, you can cut it low, but it, particularly if there's enough bare space that you can get stickers coming in like that, go ahead and raise that lawnmower height because they do not like vigorous grass. Now, of course, the problem with Centipede is it is never vigorous, and it never fully shades the ground, particularly in Mobile. It's just one of those things that we... Centipede is a problem we create for ourselves. And, you know, it's a toughie, but I would definitely raise a mower height. There are some, I think there's some pre-emergents that work on stickers. I'll have to go look them up that may stop the seeding, but I got to make sure they're compatible with Centipede. It's too late right now to apply them. So the only thing you can do right now is raise your mower height and see if that doesn't help. Go ahead and raise it as soon as possible, and maybe in the future start raising your mower height as soon as you see any green in that grass at all. Start raising your mower height. Okay.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks. Ooh, stickers. I hate them. I hate them when they get in my feet. Now I'm old and wear shoes all the time. That's terrible, isn't it? Oh, and then socks. Oh, they get all over your socks, says Charlie. Yes, it's there. They can be quite annoying. There's no question. No question. Rob, I'm listening. What's up?
Hey, Bill.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I was going to ask you about one of my mom's favorite tomatoes, and it's called the if I'm saying it right, Campari?
Campari, that's right.
Are they grown here, or where do they actually come from?
Yeah. It's a grocery store tradition. There are probably better tomatoes, but for grocery store tomatoes, they're not bad. They are a variety of tomato that tends to be... probably like most tomatoes, they're probably grown in California. They may be grown in Mexico. They may be grown in Brazil. I have not grown them. I wouldn't recommend fooling with them in Mobile. They're much better tomatoes that'll do well for us. But they are tomatoes that were developed so that all the tomatoes hang on the stem and ripen at once. And that's a great marketing tool, right? They have decent flavor, in part because they're not big and watery. But you can do better for Mobile. I mean, I bet there are tomatoes that even your mother would like better than Campari that you could grow in Mobile. But I would not recommend Campari for Mobile.
Okay. My other question was using bean mold as a pesticide for, my pepper plant.
It can work. Okay. I rarely, but hold on, because I got to ask. You know, the one great thing about peppers is I don't usually have a lot of pest problems. So what kind of pest problems have you got on your peppers?
Well, I mean, I don't have any this year yet, but I'm just seeing a few holes in the big leaves. And I've got a few peppers put out.
Yeah, so here's what I would say. And I've said this before. Until you see holes that represent at least 15 to 20% of the leaf surface, you just say, oh, what a lovely little hole. It ain't going to hurt my pepper at all. And you know what? The good thing I always tell people about holes in plants is you don't have to eat the holes. And so
don't
worry about them until you see about 15 to 20% damage, and then it's going to stress the plants. I almost never have to treat a pepper plant. Now, I'm not saying they're probably sorry little bell peppers that are just tooky as they can be, and they need all kind of fine care. And you might have to, they may be more susceptible to certain types of caterpillars or something, but yeah. So I don't think you're going to need to use that neem oil on those peppers at all.
All right. Well, I thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All right. 1 minute to break. Does that give me any time to do anything here, Charlie? Let's see. I got to go back. Oh, boy. I got a lot of questions I got to get to from text. Tony, there was something. Tony, I wanted to get to you real quickly. Tony Fowl River said what you've got on the purple mustards is a powdery mildew. It gets it this time of year. Maybe it's a downy mildew. It's powdery mildew. It's very hard to deal with. You can wash it off. It's not going to hurt you. But yeah, it kind of puts an end to mustards this time of year. The little pine that you have is not longleaf. And the reason it's not longleaf is it doesn't look like grass. It looks like a baby pine. And when it looks like a little baby pine tree with all those little needles coming out along the stem, it has a stem, you know it's a loblolly or a slash. It's got to look like grass. It looks like grass. And it will look like grass for a long time. We'll come back. I'll try to talk to you more about it. And Tony, you can call me.
Won't take long. Sing it right once or twice. Oh, Lord, and me, didn't I shake sugary? Everything I got is done and gone. Everything I got is done and gone. On my watch, on my chain, on everything that was in my name. Oh, Lord of me, didn't I shake sugary? Everything I got is done and gone.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning, and boy, we do this for 2 hours. Can you believe there's a two-hour show here? And it just feels like I don't have enough time. But I can't do a third hour. It's too much. But we got a lot to cover here in 2 hours. Some folks I didn't get to this morning. Abby, call me. Let's try this again next week, Abby. Got some questions about the proper way to dry garlic. Let's talk about that next week. If there's some red spider lily questions, like chorus questions, oh, I'm sorry, I don't think I'm going to get to all these. If I don't get to them, will you call me back and let's talk about it next week? They're all great questions. Dan sent me a picture of a beautiful golden tomato that is spawn of sun gold. Sounds like some kind of weird horror movie, doesn't it, Dan? You know, people are looking for the classic spawn of sun gold. And if you can find an open pollinated spawn of sun gold, you got something, buddy. So we got to talk next week about how to preserve this. It's a little complicated because you're selecting it from a hybrid, but that's a beautiful tomato. If it tastes good, if it's got that great flavor, if it's producing that early, you're on to something. So let's talk about that. That's pretty good. Tony? So, yeah, you got it, Tony. Tony, you're on the phone now, right, Tony?
Yep, I'm here.
Yep. And so Tony sent me a bunch of pictures this morning. He's in pursuit of longleaf and longleaf seedlings. And one of the funny things about longleaf seedlings is you don't go looking for a tree seedling. You look for grass because that's what longleaf looks like. And so Tony sent me a picture of what looks like a teeny tiny little pine tree, like maybe 3 inches high. It's got a stem. Yep. It's got lots of leaves coming out of it. And you know what? It's a pine, but it isn't longleaf. It's probably slash or loblolly. Hard to tell at this stage. I should figure out if I can tell the difference between loblolly and slash seedlings. I'm not that smart at this point. But it's either loblolly or slash.
Well,
what
Bill,
you showed me in...
Do I need to look around my living longleafs? Or should I look more
now,
in
hold
areas
on.
Where we've had longleaf removed?
Because the last picture you sent me, last picture you sent me, just now, it's longleaf.
All right. I know where they're at. Woohoo, I found them.
You got them. So it looks like grass, right? There's no stem.
That's why I didn't take a picture and send it earlier, because I was like, well, this thing's going to have some blades of grass coming off of it. That's not a tree.
I told you last week, Tony. It looked like grass. Didn't I tell you that?
You did, yeah. That's exactly what it looks like. That's why I thought, that can't be a tree.
And you didn't believe me. So there it is. But you got it, and it looks like grass. You can tell the difference because it's much stiffer than grass. It feels like pine needle. It looks like it feels like a baby pine needle, but it looks like grass.
Bitty ones do look like a baby pine needle. So that's a good description.
Yeah, that's right. So there you go, and you got it. Listen, the mustard issue. It's just time. You know, there's a season.
But I've been enjoying those mustard leaves. I take the purple mustard leaf, clean it up good, and put it on a sandwich. Oh my goodness.
I know. It is one of the best things in the world. It is just so delicious. You know, you quit even buying mustard when you got those mustard leaves.
Quit buying lettuce.
Our lettuce. It's just unbelievably delicious. But it's time, and we really can't do mustard. We can do it 6 months, 7 months, but when it gets to be this hot, they just ain't going to make it.
Yep. Well, thank you for the information. You got me headed in the right direction.
All right, Tony. Good, good. I'm glad you found that longleaf. I'm glad you found that longleaf. So we don't have much time. It's the way it works, but I'm going to try to do a flash now. We have any more callers? We don't have any more callers, do we? Good. So let me go back and let me try to deal with. I've got a pot of red spider lilies. There we go. I want to wait until the leaves die to divide the bulbs. And we've done all that. So my texter has done everything right. They're waiting until the foliage dies down. This is about the time to dig your red spider lilies, the lycores. But what's the spacing and how deep should they be planted? You know, as long as the bulb is covered by dirt, it doesn't really matter. Bulb's going to find its own depth. There's no need to plant things very deeply in this climate. And the roots, once they root in, are going to get pulled in. You just plant them deep enough that something doesn't kick them out of the ground, basically. And so, you know, once you get that little stem above the bulb, you might want to, it could be sticking out of the ground. That's okay. There's not a lot of precision needed in terms of planting the bulb. Don't plant too deep because our ground is wet. The bulb will find its own depth. When it puts out roots, it will pull itself in just as deep as it wants to be, as deep as it needs to be. I can sort of explain how that happens, but it happens. So depth is not an issue. Spacing is, it's how quickly you want to have and how dense you want the flowers to be. If you want the flowers to be a little more dense, you plant the bulbs pretty close. If you want to give plant room for these, if you don't have that many bulbs, and you kind of want to spread them out in a line over a longer area, you put the spacing a little farther apart. But, you know, you could plant them as close as, I'd say 6 inches, and you'd be fine. And you could plant them a foot apart, and you'd be fine. You just won't get, the flowering won't be as dense right away. Abby, boy, you got some, this is a fun spot. She's got a spot Abby has a spot in Midtown that is kind of, she says it's mosquito ridden. Now, I can tell you about the mosquitoes. The mosquitoes like that spot because it's shady. It's not necessarily because there's water there. They're actually hovering there because it is shady, and they will hover in shade. That's just one of the issues with mosquitoes. If you're going to eliminate mosquitoes, we need to figure that out otherwise. But boy, there's a lot of fun things you could do there. I just need to know what you might like to talk about, so, and what you might like to grow. So we'll talk about that next week if you'll give me a call. And I have just flat stinking run out of time. But we'll be back next week. Give us a call next week. Text us next week. We'll have lots of fun.
As a child, my family would travel down to western Kentucky, where my parents were born.